We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
Facebook is a wonderful thing in our culture. Just 5 minutes before we went on the air, I was able to log in, there's my daughter, and watch my daughter take the plunge into a lake in 50-degree weather for a charity that she's supporting. It's the Cold Water Challenge. So it's just amazing. So I'm going to have to get off the air here early tonight to send some chicken soup to college because I know she's going to catch a cold 2 weeks before finals. Thank you, my dear. And I also want to wish my son a happy 21st birthday today. Today's his 21st birthday. How quickly time flies. My goodness. Speaking of Facebook, there is something I kind of wanted to bring up about Facebook this week. As you know, Missouri Grassroots Coalition has a Facebook page. Culture Vigilante has a Facebook page. And I also network with some folks at the Patriot Nation who have a Facebook page. Now, those folks have over almost 400,000 folks who have liked their page over the course of time. And they, you know, I help them contribute, but for the most part, they just do a fabulous job of putting out information. You know, we all have varying views on various issues, concerning the conservative movement. There are several admins in the Patriot Nation, but, they've grown that page to almost 400,000 folks, and there was a time when they were reaching 35 million folks through social media on that page. And Facebook has, over the course of just a very short period of time, maybe the last 6 or 8 months, decided that social media is not going to work for the folks unless you pay to play. So they've been adjusting their algorithms over time to squash your reach, to narrow in your reach. So now, you're basically reaching maybe 5%. If you have a Facebook page of any sort, you're basically reaching 5% of your audience, of your liked friends, anytime you make a post because you are not paying to play. Now, Facebook is a privately held company. Well, it's publicly held now, I think. It's capitalism, folks. They want to make money. That's fine. But, actually the market drives in the capitalistic society. And if you are sick and tired of the manipulation of your social media, and I can tell you for sure that while this particular instance is not a targeting of the Patriot Nation, it's happening to all the pages across the row. But if you're tired of having your message limited, then you need to send a message to Facebook and tell them to knock this stuff off. If they want to make money, they need to find a better way to make money. People are going to be leaving Facebook. Facebook is going to die over time because the social media service is not going to be serving the patrons as well as it was when it was first, during its first inception. So just something you need to know. A lot of people don't understand it. A lot of people don't know what's happening. They may not even realize what's going on. But your reach through social media, Facebook, is drastically diminished, and it's because you're not paying to play. So if you want to change this, I always have believed that people have the power. It's the power is in the hands of the people. We're the consumers. Get on your Facebook and let those folks know. Start posting tonight that you don't like the new algorithms that is limiting your reach in Facebook. Let them know what's going on. And thank God my daughter's feed is still showing up in my Facebook feed, or I would have never been able to watch her plunge into that cold lake this afternoon. My God, these college kids. What are you going to do? So anyway, this is Lisa Payne Nager. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I am joined this evening by Cindy McGee of Show Me Patriots, and we have quite a few things lined up for you folks tonight. We have kind of a full lineup. Thanks for joining me, Cindy. I would not have been able to do this tonight by myself. How are you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little worried about my daughter, but
I would be a little worried too. Having a son who is very much into extreme sports type things, you know, jumping out of planes, snowboarding, I don't know, the list goes on and on and on, parasailing, he's done it all. You know, you kind of reach a point where you just pray a lot. Hope to hear from him the next day.
Oh, I know.
That sounds terrible, but it's pretty, it can be pretty hair-raising, actually.
You know,
it was much
easier
when they were little.
I don't know. I mean, I guess it was. I wasn't sleeping much, so I don't really remember a lot back then.
My kids were little.
My kids are literally 5 days shy of being 2 years apart. So, it was rough back then. And yeah, I mean, at least I guess I could control the situation. I can't control it now. It's for sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
Yeah. You're right.
At least she's okay. So.
Yeah, she's right. Well,
for a good cause.
You know, they say the apple never falls far from the tree, but I never jumped into a cold lake in the middle of April, so my kids. Anyway.
Yep, and I never jumped out of a plane, so what to tell you.
Well, don't you have kids in the military who kind of did that for, you know, the military?
Well, no, I don't have any kids in the military that did that. No, Evan
in the Air Force.
The one that I'm talking about that does all the extreme stuff, he's in the Navy, and he's a lieutenant commander, and he was a flight officer and flew off of a carrier over in Japan for a couple of years. So that's a pretty scary thing to do. One day they actually had a bad landing, and one of the wheels caught on fire, and he looked out and saw nothing but flames. And so, you know, fortunately, I didn't hear about it until it was over with, and he was fine. That's good.
And the fire was out, oh, my God, in the middle of the ocean on an aircraft carrier. That's not a good thing. Whoa. Anyway, okay, so we have a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. Common Core, rising up like, I mean, okay, so Common Core, okay, I can't wait for the session to be over because, I mean, you, Cindy, know Gretchen and Ann very well. We've been watching those ladies and their entourage that they have built up a fabulous network. You know, they're beating the pavement down there in Jefferson City. And as are other people across the country in their own states, in their legislatures, trying to put a halt to something that's already been implemented, which is, I don't know why it's so hard, but once it's been implemented, you almost can't get rid of it. Common Core, big deal. We've got several bills in the Missouri legislature. Folks have several bills across the country in their state legislatures. What a damn mess, I'll tell you. I think it's safe to say that Common Core is one of the biggest social engineering brouhahas that this country probably has ever seen. Because it goes straight to the heart of our children. It indoctrinates them young. Most, you know, not all, but most of the people with kids in public school are completely disengaged. They have absolutely no idea what's going on in their public schools, nor do they care. I mean, that is just a sad reality. We all want to think that we've got great parents, everybody cares about their kids, but most of the time I'm telling you, people just want to put their kids on a yellow bus and forget about it for the rest of the day and leave everything else up to the school, which is why it has been so easy for this Common Core thing to sneak in unnoticed by most of the folks.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have Robin Eubanks on in a little bit with us to talk about the social engineering train wreck that this thing really is and what this means on all kinds of levels for folks across the country, and kids across the country. It's just a huge, huge mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know we're going to be talking to someone later, too, about a situation here in Missouri that involves the public education system. And, you know, when you look at the data collection that is involved with Common Core, that whole data collection system, and then you think about what they're doing to a family here in Missouri, that we'll talk about later, it's, you know, you really can connect the dots, and they do connect.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
You have to say, you know, our public education system, like so many other things, is so far out of control and is so violating the rights of individual citizens, children, their parents, and Common Core, when the whole package is fully implemented, that is Common Core, and the data system that's involved, data collection system that's involved, parents will have lost total control of their children and the decisions that are going to be made about their children's futures. And in addition to that, the children will have lost control of their future and what they want to do with their future. That is how egregious this is when it's all said and done.
Yeah. Speaking about losing control and losing your parenting rights, we're going to have Christopher Agee on a little bit later on, too, to talk about some great reporting that he's doing at the Western Center for Journalism on the Justina case. We're going to maybe get a little bit of an update on that case and the Bundy Ranch issue. Western Center for Journalism has been doing a great job of just covering almost every aspect of that issue, and we're going to kind of touch base with them and see if they found out anything new or if there's anything new and unusual going on, maybe hit some of the fine points that haven't been hit over the last couple of weeks. And we're going to, again, talk to Paul Ellison of American Spring, Guerrilla Radio, American Spring, talking about this family. And every time we have him on, I mean, this family that he's following is such a great example of what's going on across the country. But I just want to reiterate, every time he gets on, this is not just one family that this is happening to. I mean, it's happening to the Pelletiers in Connecticut or Boston. It's happening here in Missouri. There are cases all over the place, all over the country, where these kinds of things are happening. This case is happening through the school system. The school system has just reached in and grabbed a hold of parenting rights, and we're going to talk about some data collection issues with Paul a little bit later on about what the schools have done and just breached privacy on these students. But I mean, right. These things are happening all over. You can't just sit back and think, oh, it's very unfortunate it's happening in Camden County in Missouri. It's happening in your school, and you probably don't even have the first idea of what's going on, because mm-hmm. these things are being implemented across the country. It's just, it's really, 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 really horrible.
Right. And, you know, it's really occurred to me, too, that it's really frightening, I guess. Like, I don't know if that's too strong. Yeah, it's frightening. And very disturbing that institutions that parents have traditionally been able to trust to work mm-hmm. with them in making sure that their children are well cared for and have what they need, whether you're talking about a physician and a hospital that are connected and you take your child there for medical care and they blow it up and take your child away for no reason, for no justification. When you look at this case in Missouri and the public education system and counselors and teachers and so forth that should be there to work with the parent and to protect those children, and they use it as an excuse to destroy the family, it's mind-boggling, but it's very concerning because parents traditionally lean on and trust these institutions.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break. I think we've got... we've got Robin on the wrong line. We're going to try to get her on the right line. And okay. Let's take a break, and we'll come back and try to get things rolling.
Okay.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@missourigrassrootscoalition.org for details.
there really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We've worked out our little technical difficulties, and we have Robin Eubanks on the line. Very happy to have her on the line. We tried to get her during the Great Georgia Snowstorm, and she was going to come to St. Louis and talk to some folks here in St. Louis and Illinois, and she got snowed in probably the snowstorm of the century for Georgia. We've got her back, though. She's going to come here to the St. Louis area. She's probably going to be getting on a plane right after this interview because she's due to be speaking in Illinois tomorrow night, Thursday, April 24th at 6:30 p.m. at the 66 Hotel and Conference Center at 6 and Stevenson in Springfield, Illinois. She is the guest of the Springfield Tea Party there, and she'll be in my neck of the woods on Friday afternoon at 12 p.m. at the Golden Corral in St. Charles County, St. Charles on Zumbel Road. Robin, thank you for being with us. Really appreciate you taking the time. I know that you have some family things going on this evening, so thanks for taking the time to talk to us for a little while. Let's get a little background on you first. You're an attorney. You are the author of Credentialed to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon. You have a fabulous blog called Invisible Serfs, the InvisibleSerfsCollar.com, in which you outline all kinds of information about connecting the dots for Common Core and all of the atrocities that are therein ensue. How did you become interested in this issue?
Accidentally. I'm a mother of several children, and I was general counsel of a healthcare company. So I, in monitoring what was going on in healthcare in the States, I would accidentally pick up some of what was going on in education. And then when I was staying home with the kids, I kind of noticed some things that didn't fit, asked perfectly respectful questions, got nuclear responses, thought that was curious, and dug in a little bit. And then when I decided I wanted to go back to practicing law, as my kids got older, I thought, oh, there are all these new regulations and laws that have just been passed. I'll read them. I'll be as much of an expert as anybody. This will be fun. And I got into the Race to the Top statute. I got into the Common Core materials and discovered that there was this huge difference between what was being said about them and what the statutes and regs actually said. So it was like, okay, this isn't going to be anywhere like what people are hearing about. And everything I knew that had ever been controversial was being expanded, and everything that had ever been known to work well was being shut down. And so I kind of dug in and decided to get the bottom of what was going on, and it turned out to be a far larger story than I had any idea.
Yeah, world. I mean, all the way across the country, and it's just, it's got so many tendrils into so many areas that it's just absolutely choking off people's parental rights and the data collection. We're going to talk about data collection a little bit later on the show with another guest, but where do you want to start? It's just nuts.
Just whatever you think people in your community are most concerned with. My focus in when I talk about the Common Core, it's partly because I got into it so early, so before there was a controversy, a lot of the materials that wouldn't be available now were available to me because nobody was paying attention to it yet. And so my focus, and it's probably the legal background, I'm a corporate and securities lawyer by training, and is who has the power to mandate what goes on in the schools and what are they saying? And so my, when you talk to most people, when they talk about the Common Core, are talking about Common Core as an idea. And I talk about Common Core as this banner, this bucket that is being used to radically change the schools in so many different directions. I'm tracking all of them, but if you're a casual, you know, if you're a parent, you would just know that there were lots of changes, and everybody will just say, that's the Common Core, that's the Common Core, but it's coming in from all these different directions. And it tracks back very tightly to what was called transformational outcomes-based education in the 90s. And so it's been broken up. So the book lays out that part, and then the blog tends to be me reacting to what's going on in real time, because I understand this stuff. It's almost like teaching yourself a foreign language. And so I know what the terms mean. I know who the players are. I monitor lots of different sites. I'm on a lot of email lists. And so it's not an exaggeration to say when I talk about what's going on that the people who are doing this are the ones telling me what they're doing.
Absolutely. Well, let's try to bring a few folks that are just kind of on the very fringes of what Common Core is, because I can tell you we just had some very contentious school board elections. You know, in Missouri, you know, our school board election time is the beginning of April. And, you know, we always have a fight between a few folks that are trying to pierce the bubble and then the very entrenched establishment, teachers union, you know, the folks that are really driving the bus. And so a lot of folks, you know, some of our candidates were really campaigning hard on Common Core, and most of the folks don't even have a clue what that is. When they're out campaigning, they're speaking Greek to these folks. So let's try to bring some reality into maybe talk about the buzzwords, maybe talk about the terms, because the establishment and the teachers' unions and all those folks are not telling the truth to the parents about what Common Core is.
Yeah, if you listen to like the talking points that come out from the Obama administration, if you looked at the platform from the Democratic National Committee, what they always use is the phrase college and career ready. It's also what's in the No Child Left Behind waivers. I mean, people talk about race to the top. It's the No Child Left Behind waivers that have really bound the school districts to implementing what, again, was called transformational outcomes-based education in the 90s. And those are mostly overlooked, and people assume that they know what student achievement means. And a term like student growth, they're just going, oh, they'll know a lot, but that's not what it means. It's by and large very psychological. There are social competencies, there interactions with other kids. There's very little knowledge in the expectations surrounding the Common Core, and that's hard for parents to appreciate, and
that's key. I mean, that's hugely key, because that is the long arm of the bureaucrats reaching in and just severing your ability to raise your kids the way you want to raise them.
Absolutely, and you just said somebody is speaking later on the data gathering. It's coming out of the digital learning. And what that can do, one of the things you see in the assessments over and over and over again, and the assessments aren't tests. They're embedded into the curriculum, and they're kind of ongoing. And because they insist on having ambiguous questions and problems that have no fixed answer and untaught problems, what they're assessing is how do you respond when there is no correct answer? How do you respond to ambiguity? Because that's giving a lot of information about your behavior at an unconscious level. So the computer learns you more about you and how you're likely to respond and how you're responding to the gaming curriculum and computer games to teach empathy and role-playing games and this literature unit that's teaching inequality. And it's tracking how you're responding to these curriculums. And part of Common Core is something called the Learning Registry, and again, sponsored by the federal government and set up within the last 2 years. And the Learning Registry will literally be where curriculum lives that is known to work with certain types of students. So if you're looking for a curriculum that's been known to change beliefs or values in a certain area for a certain kind of student, be they minority, be they upper middle class, be they somebody with professional parents, the Learning Registry will know that. They'll know what's been proven to be a good curriculum to change values, attitudes, and beliefs in the way that someone desires.
So while I think the answer to this next question is rather obvious, Why is the federal government doing this? Why are they trying to get the answers to these kinds of questions?
The federal government, in conjunction with various international organizations, some the UN, some the OEC, have changed their template on how they think economies should work. They want a public sector centric economy. They want to be to go back to the historical norm where the king also had all the economic power. Well, they want to be, they don't want to own the companies, but they want to be able to tell them what to do. And so part of that kind of economy and society requires that you don't have people who have a whole lot of information, have well-developed logical minds that are going to, you know, jump up and down and say, I see what's going on. No.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I didn't go looking for that story, but that's what comes up, you know, every time you turn around. And, you know, the current Secretary General of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, has said, we don't need any additional treaties. We've got education. And, you know, things like the accreditation agencies, the accreditors report to UNESCO. So there are all these areas where people logically assume that they have a watchdog in place, be it a school board, be it the accreditation agency, being other entities. And they're actually part of a coordinated effort to change culture, to change prevailing beliefs, to, you know, you said that you've got lots of people who were interested in running for the school board. I mean, any school district is frequently the major employer in lots of parts of the state. It's either in
sure.
Unless you're in a major metropolitan area, it's either the school board or the local hospital that are the biggest employers in the area. And
yep.
They've got a stream of income from real estate taxes and other things. And it's a cash machine. And we haven't really appreciated that, but lots of people have. And that's a huge part of this. People, you know, it's much easier to satisfy a customer when you get the contract through a political crony than it is to keep lots of individual customers happy, you know, for an extended period of time. It's a very cronyistic vision. There, it's an alliance among big business that benefits, tech companies that benefit, NGOs, various government, everybody benefits, but the taxpayers footing the bill who aren't going to understand why the school doesn't provide. We're kind of in a twilight zone now, whereas they haven't fully switched over to the new assessments that are not really testing knowledge. And so in a lot of the schools, what the kids have noticed is they're still being held responsible for content, but the teachers aren't allowed to teach it anymore. So it's you go to school, and the teachers aren't allowed to teach you the material. They're still testing on it. And it's just horrible for the kids. I mean, I will get teenagers who'll ask me, is it going to be better next year? The teacher's going to be allowed to finally teach us again. And you have to say no. And they're like, why? And the answer is we're in a transition stage to a new vision for education that's tied to these substantial, you know, fundamental transformations. I'm not pulling that out of thin air because it was used during the 2008 campaign. There's no other word for what's described tied to the education agenda than a fundamental transformation. It's very, very communitarian, over and over again. In fact, the real definition of career ready tracks back to a willingness to show on a daily basis that you put others first. You know,
oh my God.
This idea of the common good is embedded in Well, it's embedded in the idea of what's global competency, which is also pushed by the CCSSO, the same people who push the Common Core. There's all this stuff going on. If you understand how it works, it's just like, you know, every day comes out another announcement of people who have the authority to force this into the classroom, saying this is what we want. National School Board Association put out a report that came out about 2 days ago, pushing the idea that the schools are going to be the community focus of the neighborhood, and they're going to provide health care, and they're going to have extended hours, and we have an obligation to make sure that every child gets everything that they need. It's like the Great Society on steroids. Well, this isn't just the Great Society on steroids. It's the Great Society on steroids tied to curriculum that intentionally plans on not teaching you how to read and not teaching math systematically and teaching you, you know, using computer games, and on top of that, they're going to try to take care of you for the rest of life. I mean, we're just kind of lighting $100 bills afire. It's my life.
So, I mean, we can go down so many avenues, and we can touch a few of them, but, you know, while you're explaining all of this, I'm kind of thinking, well, what is the vision for the long term? I mean, if we have a few generations of kids who are going through school getting Common Core diplomas, who can't read, who can't do simple math, who can't write, how are we going to staff a workforce? How are we going to be a leader in technology? How are we going to survive?
The vision that's tied to this is not to have any unapproved technological development. So basically, you're trying.
But who's going to develop it?
They don't want it. This exists. I mean, if you go to this story and you go back to the 90s version, you run across a lot of companies that were involved in the 90s version that don't exist anymore. And so in this time around, the sales point, we'll talk about WorldCom and all these other companies, DEC, that have ceased to exist. And it's reminding the big business that, you know, you can disappear too. So you need to play with this political agenda and let us manage where you keep your current stable of revenue, because it's a largely politically directed economy, and hey, you're at the table. So it's in the last chapter of the book, one of the things that I lay out using a UN document from within the last 2 years is that they want veto power before any country can develop, begin manufacturing new technology. It's a very stagnant vision, and because most of the people who were involved in pushing this have spent their entire life on the public payroll or bouncing back and forth between foundations who don't pay taxes and the public payroll, and occasionally going to work for somebody who does a lot of business with the government, and they have no concept of how the real economy works. And there's, when you read the materials, you look at it and you go, you have no idea that it's not a fixed pie, do you? They really do think that they can game the system and not change the nature of the economy. Well, that's not how it works. So part of the reason I feel so compelled to tell this story is there's no question that if we continue on the trajectory we are being directed towards, they will blow up what does work, and they have no idea what the consequences are going to be. Their assumptions are false, and so we will get the breakage. They won't get their utopia, and all of the people that they're counting on paying, because the way this works, so many of the people who are pushing this, they may have been, a lot of them now have barely taught in the classroom. They go almost directly into administration, becoming assistant principals, quickly becoming principals because of their willingness to push this. In their mind, because of the way the pension system works, they'll for pushing this, they get rewarded with more promotions, and then in their mind, they'll retire on the average of their last 3 years of income and make money courtesy of the taxpayer for the rest of their life. So their incentive is to push this hard. Well, I don't know who they think is going to pay all these pensions, because that's not you can't. There's nobody around if nobody has any knowledge.
Yeah,
and
nobody will be working.
And you know, there's this idea that the human capital is met if you get degrees in people's hands, even though the degree has been stripped of any real value by what you're pushing, that by saying that video gaming in the classroom is A-OK.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you get a high school diploma because you were allowed to be a participant in group projects and do video gaming, and I haven't read all the state's waivers. I've looked at most of them. I've read Georgia's, and in Georgia's NCLB waiver, it basically says that if you can't read, that's no longer to be a barrier to being promoted. And I said, you know, are you going to tell the student? Are you going to tell his parents? You know, we're going to get a high school credential in the hands of somebody who can't read. And he's not going to be able to do group projects all of his life.
One second here. Okay, so this is something that's kind of interesting. I mean, I have two college kids, and I am noticing, too, that, I mean, my kids were dual enrolled. I homeschooled them, so they were dual enrolled. They've attended different universities, and now they are in a university, you know, for their four-year college situation. And I have noticed something that they have spent a lot of time, and it's across the board, most of their classes involved a lot of group activity type of work. So
yes.
It's not just happening in the primary and secondary levels of education. It's going throughout. It's extended into college. I mean, that mindset has expanded.
Yeah, I talk about it in Chapter 5, basically the shift in higher ed and when that happened. I've also talked about it on the blog some. But, yeah, the idea is to change the nature of college commensurate with changing the nature of K through 12. So it's all a system. You are spending massive amounts of money to push people through the system, but at the end of the day, they don't know hardly anything, and they've got a credential, and they have expectations because they have this credential that they're going to have a middle-class job. Well, they don't know anything. They are, you know,
right.
Whatever they think, really not worth more than a minimum wage because they don't have any marketable knowledge and skills, and some of them have terrible work ethics. Anytime you get most of the world's revolutions have come from having a significant group of people whose life expectations about the future can't be fulfilled. So this is a ticking time bomb pushing this idea that this is my expectation. Somebody needs to meet it. We need fundamental change.
Cindy, you had a question. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Well, no, I was just going to ask Robin, is it fair to say that one of the things that they also think that they can do and what they're trying to do, and I think this harkens back to the school to work school-to-work programs and stuff that we fought back in the 80s and 90s, but think they can create a managed workforce, and at the same time they're really discouraging entrepreneurship and trying to quash that spirit through what they're doing too, to prevent people from coming outside that box and disrupting this worldview they have of how the economies are supposed to work.
Exactly, and I put a comment up today saying that the workplace learning statute that the Georgia governor signed yesterday reminded me perfectly of school to work. We already have career pathways, which I talk about in the book, and I told readers, start looking for these workplace learning statutes in your state. This time school to work is coming in purely at the state level. It's coming in under high school reforms, again, being pushed by the federal government. Was in Obama's State of the Union. Remember, we talked about PTEC and doing high school reforms. So every element that was controversial during the 90s is back, generally with a new name, and frequently it's been broken into three pieces this time. But somebody who has binding authority on the classroom is pushing it. And the knowledge that was existed in the 90s is gone, and people are not, they're not appreciating how this all fits together. But it fits tightly.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't that also fit back, go back to the secondary education colleges for a long time have been transformed? And they had to do that in order to get people who would teach this and not question it.
Yeah, and now, see, it's tied to the effective teaching criteria. The federal government has said you have to have, as part of the, you know, Child Left Behind waivers, you've got to tie teaching to student growth. So you've got, they, if they're going to stay in the classroom, they're going to have tenure, they have to be effective teachers. To be an effective teacher, you've got to be pushing student growth. Student growth is, by and large, social and emotional learning, how you get along with others, whether you have the right values, whether you have the right attitudes. If you're a teacher and you don't want to push that model, you need to find other employment. And so what you're seeing is the tenure laws going away. Well, there are real problems with the tenure laws in the states, but the reason they're being eliminated is not because we want teachers who really know biology, physics, and love Shakespeare. They're getting, you know, you can, I can't tell you how many wonderful teachers are being told they can't teach anymore. They can't lecture. They can't explain systematically the material to the kids. But if you're willing to push this social and emotional project orientation in the classroom, you're going to be an effective teacher. You've got, you know, you've got your road to your pension and maybe the, you know, district office, and that's how it's working.
So, Robin, how can we kind of break this down so that we can kind of get this information out to the casual bystander, the casual person who has children in school, who's just maybe got one ear to the ground, maybe showing up for the parent-teacher conference and buying the sack of bologna that the teachers are selling and the administrators are selling to the parents? How can we kind of put that out there so that we can start educating folks on a wider scale?
That's what I wrote the book to do. The blog is different from the book. The book I wrote so that whatever the problem is that first got your attention, that there's something wrong, the book explains how it fits into the rest. And the book's kind of designed to be timeless like that, and is more relevant now than it was when I first wrote it a couple years ago. It really is what's going on, and it does get the overall picture. So that if it's the fact that they don't teach your kid math, if it's the fact that you now recognize the whole language, if you don't understand why they're not teaching the material, that's all kind of systematically laid out in the book. I think it's important for parents to understand that, by and large, this is a complete shift away from the transmission of knowledge. It's not about imparting knowledge. The only knowledge that they want is knowledge that's politically useful, and basically there's the broad concepts that they want students to have because they want them to change how they perceive the world, how they perceive themselves, how they perceive the world. If it fans a sense of grievance, that's politically powerful. If it fans a sense of outrage, politically powerful. So those are the concepts. It's why race is so important. It's why you're hearing so much about inequality. You hear a term like close reading, and you assume in English language arts that close reading means that they want you to pay lots of attention to the facts of this wonderful play. No, they want you reading through what they call lenses. And the lenses are what you're going to be trained to see the world through. So you practice it in the classroom with your English materials. You practice it with the kind of problems that you're given in science and math, and they're the same
cross-curriculum,
the lenses over and over again.
Yeah,
it's indoctrination, but it's not indoctrination in facts so much. It's indoctrination with how you're trying to train students to perceive the world, so that when you're not around and they're not in the classroom, it's why it's so important in the assessments for it to be untaught problems, ambiguous problems, more than one answer, because it trains the person to, as the ideologues say at the level I research at, they want to train the student to act in the face of uncertainty. And it's all about a willingness to act. It's why it's so important to get at emotions, that the student comes to feel, and feeling is very important. They don't like, I use the metaphor, the axe maker mind. They want action to come from feeling. And so the students just gain this sense that this is an unjust world, it needs to change. And what we will do is we will try this and see how it works and adjust. I mean, only somebody who's spent their adult life living off grants or tax money would come up with these scenarios that we're just going to kind of wing it and try out these new theories and see how it works and try to look out for everybody and push, you know, communitarianism. And it doesn't make logical sense, but that, you know, false theories can be very influential. And I may have tracked this at a very deep level and put all the pieces together, but nobody was meant to do that. And most of the people who push this see it through just their little sliver. And through their little sliver, it seems to be a nice idea. Maybe that would be a better world. But you piece it all together, and it's apparent that it's not workable. And, you know, a world where nobody knows much that's accurate is a very dangerous place. And, I go into that in the book, that this has been imagined before. There were people in Germany in the 19th century who wanted to create a unconscious impulse to respond on behalf, and you read it and you just go, that sounds so much like what I just read, you know, from somebody else contemporary and what they're pushing in the school. And so I was a history major. I like economics, so what I have tried to do in the book is this is a story about education, because education is the means, but also talk about what it's a means for, where it's been done, what the consequences have been, what the likely consequences are this time, because this is just what happens. And the fact that it's now in three pieces and has a new name is not likely to change the consequences. So I really do try to turn this into a story, and you can't solve a problem if you're unaware of the problem or if you're unaware of the likely consequence. So I'm at the stage where I'm still trying to bring people's attention to, these are all the elements that are under attack, and they're under attack by people who have the authority to dictate what goes on in the classroom. This is what they're dictating. This is what they say must happen. This is what they're measuring. This is what it means. And just kind of wake people up to what's going on, because these ideas have been tried in school districts, and they've had notorious results. And if you nationalize and internationalize something that has worked poorly or in some cases tragically in other school districts, you either have to be naive or an ideologue to do that, but that is what's going on. Sorry, I got a call.
Amazing. That's okay. Well, the book is called Credentialed to Destroy, How and Why Education Became a Weapon. How can we get your book?
It's on Amazon, and then I'll have copies when I speak on both tomorrow
Thursday
and
Friday?
On Friday, yeah. And I'm taking my Sharpie so I can sign them. And,
good.
But it's also available on Amazon, and it's available as an e-book, too. So,
okay.
But, yeah, it's I've tried my best to I don't talk about anything until I can document it. If I'm theorizing about something, I'm theorizing around about known events and trying to figure out what the connection is. And I still don't write about it until I know what the connection is among the known events, and I'm relying on somebody's declaration, this is what I intend to do. And so there's not really a dispute about what I'm saying. There's just seems to be kind of shock that somebody put all the pieces together.
Absolutely. Seems to be the kind of book that folks need to be sharing among carpools and PTA meetings and throughout the neighborhood. Folks need to be sharing this with their friends and their neighbors because I'm telling you that you're not going to get this information from the school districts. It's not in their best interest to educate you on the reality of this horrendous social experiment.
I don't think they know the whole in the school district. Well, I think they know some of it. They know they're lying to the parents. But I would like to think that if they had any idea of the consequences of what they're pushing, they would step back. And so that's part of why I've gone to so much trouble to tie all this down. As I've said, are you an intentional change agent or an inadvertent one? Because given what you're pushing, that's what you're doing. And so ask the principal.
Not good. Go to InvisibleSurfsCollar.com, go to Amazon and get the book. Show up on Thursday at Route 66 Hotel and Conference Center at 6:30 p.m. To hear Robin and to get a copy of her book, courtesy of the Springfield Tea Party. Then take a drive over to St. Charles County, Missouri, the Golden Corral on Zumbel Road in St. Charles County, Missouri at noon. And meet her there and join us for a Pachyderm meeting. Thank you, Robin. I know that you took some time out from being with your kids today. Thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it.
It's back to carpool.
Okay. We'll see you. Definitely see you on Friday. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me on. Thanks. Bye.
Good night. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Paul Ellison of American Spring.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there are certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne-Nager. I'm joined with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Very interesting conversation with Robin Eubanks. Hope to have her back on the program again soon. Can't wait to see her in St. Charles County and Springfield, Illinois this week. Just absolutely amazing what's going on in the public school systems regarding the education of your kids and what they are telling you about the education of your kids and how they are kind of just maybe steamrolling right over your parental rights. We talked a little bit earlier about some of the legislation that's going through Missouri right now regarding the data collection connected to Common Core. We have on the line with us tonight Paul Ellison of American Spring 2011, who's been following a couple of cases in his neck of the woods in Missouri related to what can really be labeled as nothing other than child trafficking and via the school systems in that area. We've talked with Paul in the past about these kinds of things, the family courts and how they are also manipulating the situations. We followed the Justina Pelletier case. I mean, the way that these things kind of end up being connected is just phenomenal if you take the time to listen to it. But tonight, Paul has some new information on some issues related to data collection happening to some cases that he's been following. Thanks for being with me tonight, Paul.
Well, thanks for having me, Lisa. It's always a pleasure to join you. I have to say, I was struck by listening to Ms. Eubanks talk about Common Core and its implementation and the transformation of education. That really was the launching point, if you will, for starting to look at the Lagares case. It certainly had its genesis from the investigative point through the school districts and their use of education, first use of educational neglect charges and an escalation from there that resulted in Denny Lagares having his parental rights stripped. But as I was listening to Ms. Eubanks talk about the transformation of education, I've spoken about this a little myself, and it truly is a way to create, if you're familiar with the movie Idiocracy, it's a way to create that with bureaucracy through our education system, and it makes a population a lot easier to control. And what we're seeing with the Lagares case is the end result of that, if you will. You know, several people across the state have spoken out about the numbers that have risen as far as children being put through or subjected to special education departments. And the Lagares case stems directly from the special education department. And we've heard on audio the school, through its attorneys and through an assumption of authority and power they don't have, simply seek to rewrite a custody agreement that was court-ordered. And to this point, as we sit here today, they've been allowed to get away with this. The reason or the real, if you will, the motive for a school district to undertake a campaign like this is evident as we look at the Lagares case. You mentioned the data sharing issues that we have recently unveiled, and we have an hour of audio. And folks, if you haven't heard this audio, I would certainly suggest you take a listen to it. It's an audio of a recording of the Lagares parents, Denny and his wife Ginger, speaking to school administrators in the Lebanon, Missouri school district about their children's data and who had access to it. Clearly, as the audio demonstrates, the school district was sharing this information with private individuals. In this case, as many of our households across Missouri probably reflect, the Lagares family is the model makeup of the modern family. They have his kids, her kids, and our kids, if you will. They have five children at the time that this was going on in 2012, living in their home under their roof. Two were Gingers from a previous marriage. A third child was Gingers also that Denny has raised since the boy was four. And then the two Lagares children themselves, Kyle and Nicole. The five children altogether, their information was shared universally with the exes of both Denny and Ginger. meaning that the parents,
the stepchildren,
were, right.
Right. They're
they
crossing
access.
Boundaries with the parents and the step parents and the exes are getting the other sets of parents' kids' information. Why would they do that?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you ask that question, Lisa, because, again, it goes back to a clear motive. Through the due processes filed against the school by the Ligarises, Denny and Ginger, on behalf of three of their children in school, these due process filings were made, and it was through this process that the data sharing became public knowledge, if you will, or they became aware of it. Ginger had indeed herself been restricted from access to her own children through the process of this, while her husband's ex-wife had access to her children's information.
That's insane.
Exactly. The school so grossly overstepped all legal boundaries with regard to going at literally targeting and going after the Ligarise children with changing a court-ordered custody agreement. And the data sharing that is evidenced by the audio that we listened to last week on Guerrilla Radio with American Spring, we see clearly that the school district itself, through the actions of its administrators, its staff, through its the advice the attorneys for the school district provided that allowed them to proceed in this fashion, the school district is exposed to incredible liabilities, both financial and criminal in some cases. And in order to prevent the Ligarise family from filing those charges or pursuing those against the school district, a campaign was mounted to strip both parents of their parental rights. And the school, as far as why they would share the data, it prompted the Department of Family Services to contact Ginger Ligarise's ex-husband and suggest to him, through this data sharing and the things that were going on with the Ligarise children in a completely separate ordeal, to use that as reason to file a new custody motion. Which has been done and which Ginger currently is attempting to fight back. This is literally a case where to protect itself, the evil entities involved here, and I don't have any problem using that word freely, the people involved with trying to take these children from their parents, rewriting a court order to do so and place them in an environment that is certainly less than ideal, it really is troublesome. And to see that they themselves have gone to these lengths to attack parental rights, and literally in Dennis's case, they currently have been suspended. He only gets to see his kids 1 hour a week at supervised visits at the DFS Center in Laclede County. It's
okay,
absolutely
I want to stop you right
sickening.
There. Okay,
sure.
So Denny Ligarise, is he – okay, so – 1 hour a week supervised visits, which would
That's
suggest
correct.
To me that he sexually molested his kids, that he abused them in some way. Do they have any evidence that he has mistreated his children in any way or that he poses a threat to the kids, a flight risk, anything? Is there any evidence whatsoever?
That's a great question, Lisa. As a matter of fact, through the school district and their data sharing, part of what they were doing as well was manipulating data. Over an 18-month period, Nicole Ligarise was in the sole custody of her mother and her boyfriend. She was taken to the hospital over 20 times during this 18 months and put on a regular regimen of antibiotics that were harmful to her health. There was one incident during this 18-month period where Nicole's mother allowed a visit for Denny with his daughter for Thanksgiving. Upon receiving Nicole into their home, Denny or Nicole started complaining of irritation and problems in her private areas. Her grandmother took her to the bathroom, examined her, found her to be in horrible condition, treated her. They then, a little while later that afternoon, took the girl to the emergency room. That was one of the only medical records that were selected by the mother in the school to enter into the educational file. They didn't enter in any of this other information regarding her doctor visits, but they did indeed use that file, that doctor visit, to attempt to paint first Denny and then all of the other male children in their household as molesters. They attempted to construct that case, and it fell apart completely, yet we're still dealing with visits under these conditions.
So, I mean, did they ever determine why the girl had this condition? Was it ever determined?
Right.
I mean, there's some suggestion that she was abused, and, you know, was Denny Lagares exonerated of this problem, or?
He was, yes, absolutely. Again, the past 18 months when his daughter was not in his custody, this was an ongoing issue. She would have recurring bouts, if you will, of redness, rawness, inflammation.
Which would suggest that it's coming from the other side.
Exactly. And these, in fact, what's really kind of strange about all of this is that shortly after, during the data sharing process, and shortly after the children were enrolled into the Lebanon School District, a doctor that had been selected by the mother for Nicole actually called the Department of Family Services hotline regarding the mother's medical neglect of the girl in regards to following her orders. In other words, you know, you shouldn't be on so many antibiotics that your body doesn't work properly. We can't do that anymore, and you need to take this medicine to try to cure a spastic bladder. To be honest, it's not been determined whether it's a hygiene issue of some sort that is not being looked after correctly, or if it is indeed something more. Along the lines of molestation, there has not been an examination of that kind ever performed on Nicole to this point.
How old is this girl?
I hope I have this right. I think she's seven. she's either seven or eight. Right.
So she's a baby.
You bet.
So to get back to the data issue, okay, so all of this information is in the school file. Why?
Well, the selected information is in the school file because the mother through the school.
Why is any of it in the school file? That's not appropriate information to be in a school file.
I wouldn't think so either, right? I would have questions about that myself as to why that information ever came about there. But again, there's certainly evidence to suggest that a level of collusion occurred between the ex-mother and the department director of the special education department in Lebanon, who knows the mother in an outside capacity away from the school.
Oh.
And there's certainly, right, there's certainly reason to suspect that this was entered in order to take away the father's custody or parental rights, or at least to regain custody or full-time custody for the ex-wife, Amanda.
And then this brings us to the cross-sharing of data for kids that aren't parents, you know, stepkids or whatever, that are, you know, that don't, the cross-sharing of that data for people that have no business seeing that, those records at all. So
well,
I listened to that audio today, and I mean, a lot of tap dancing going around with the administration on why data was incorrectly entered or incorrectly shared.
Mm-hmm. They didn't really have a good answer for why that happened, because I'm afraid to say for the school district, there is no good reason for this to have ever occurred. In order to do what they did, they had no choice but to manually replace information. and thereby cutting off Ginger Lagares's access. And as I said, Ginger was in court this week in regards to a custody hearing that is a direct result of this data sharing, because DFS, with what was kind of going on in regards to the Lagares children, made the suggestion to Ginger's ex-husband, hey, I think now would be a good time to review your custody.
Mm-hmm. It all stinks. It's a lot of behind, under the table, behind the back door sharing of information that's not legal to share between good old boy networks in your county in order for people to benefit from. It's what it sounds like.
Well, it really is. Whenever we talk about, for example, you know, child trafficking, I've taken some heat about the use of that word. But when you look, for example, just simply at the law firm that represents the Lebanon School District, this is a law firm that was paid to give advice that allowed school to and its administration to essentially thwart the law in regards to a custody agreement. Then on the other side of that, that same law firm gets to collect money again for defending their own horrid actions. It's an absolute cycle. And, you know, one of the last interesting things, I want to make sure I get this point on your program, Lisa,
sure,
because I think that you'll certainly appreciate it. Ginger Lagares, doing research on her own behalf, because neither one, Ginger nor Dennis, have an attorney currently. She was doing research on her own behalf and uncovered something in the 26th Judicial District in Missouri that I think your listeners certainly might want to look into in their own hometown. And it is this practice. According to the Missouri State Supreme Court's guidelines and their ruling itself, they say that in order to be a qualified GAL, an attorney or whomever this person is to be the GAL must do continuing education and file an affidavit with the courts in order to prove that they have taken this education. This is a yearly recertification process for GALs. Mm-hmm. What we found here, in Laclede County, there were only three such affidavits on file. There were absolutely none found in Camden County. And this came to light as the person who is the GAL, the attorney, Mr. Brad York, who is the GAL for Denny Lagares right now, was promoted by the judge to fill the role of GAL in Ginger's case. Ginger raised an objection. Mr. York's wife works at the school district in the special education department, giving him a very vested financial interest in seeing the Lagares' rights stripped so they can't sue the school district for what they've done to this point. Mm-hmm. This argument to have Mr. York excluded as Ginger's GAL was enough to convince the judge who sits on her case, a Judge Jackson, to agree that he had a conflict of interest. This is the exact same argument that has been presented on more than one occasion through Denny and his attorneys to a judge in Camden County, again, also in the 26th Judicial District, that would also exclude Mr. York from being the GAL in his case, although he has not ever been removed. And again, as stated before, Mr. York isn't even a certified GAL based on not following what was laid forth by the Missouri State Supreme Court. So we have quite a little deal going on here right now, as you can surely imagine.
Are you reading from, is this a state statute or is this merely the guidelines that were approved I think last year. No, 2012.
These are the guidelines that came, actually, it was a ruling that was, I think it was 2000 that was issued, and I'll have to check. I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry, I'm not in front of my computer at the moment, so I didn't
yeah,
come
those guidelines were
to have it in front of me.
Yeah, in 2011 or 2012, those were reapproved. That went through the legislature. Yeah, I'll have to talk to you about that, because that's another shady little deal, too, that was changed. So the guidelines for qualifying guardians ad litem in Missouri, the continuing ed went from like 12 hours down to 6 hours, and a lot of those are just merely guidelines. They're not state statutes, so they are not rule of law in Missouri. So they can.
Well, that would shock me.
Yeah, we'll talk about that, because that's another shady little deal, because I followed that very closely, because getting these folks nailed down, well, when you are dealing with attorneys, it's their playing field, it's their ball, they make the rules, and nobody is monitoring them. So, and I can't remember which year, if it was 2011, 2012, it was around that time. In 2000, they were set to be, the guardian ad litem standards were set to be reevaluated and passed through the legislature, and they were, done so. The Supreme Court went through all the processes to do that privately. They wouldn't allow public to contribute to that process, and they passed that through the legislature unanimously, with the exception of one senator. And no one in the Missouri State Legislature read the standards before they unanimously passed them.
Wow.
Yeah. And the holdout senator.
No wonder we have Common Core.
Yeah. And the holdout senator was Jim Lemke. He voted no, and he's the only one. But because I remember I fought that battle, and I begged and implored the Senate committee, because I testified in the Senate hearing, for those folks to at least read those standards, because they so sealed the deal for attorneys to run that show outside of any public oversight. It was absolutely ridiculous. The standards were loose enough as it was to begin with, and then when they redid those standards right after, I think it's 2011, but I can't remember the year.
It is 2011, I think. Somebody just gave that to me.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
I got a little text message. Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, it's just so indicative of how you're exactly right. You know, it's their ball, it's their field, they make the rules, and the rest of us simply abide by them. And it literally is, at least in our landscape here at the Lake of the Ozarks, it literally is a case where it's a two-tiered justice system, that those who are in that rule-making crowd or in that profession certainly have the inside track on anyone else, and if you don't like it, we'll just slap a lawsuit against you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I know that well. Well, Mr. Ellison, have the Ligarises, have they found some conclusion to their data sharing, and do they have any information for the rest of the folks out there who their kids may have sensitive data that's being shared and they don't know about it?
Well, sure. I think that one of the things that was most shocking, and I think you would agree, Lisa, is the very basic personal identification information that was shared illegally.
Sure.
And, I think when you're talking about Social Security numbers, I mean, not just the data that's collected on our kids. That's exactly right. I think that, you know, really we're talking about something that is, you know, just absolutely is rife with problems to begin with. They discovered this only through the filing of a due process or through a due process filing against the school. Otherwise, the Ligarises never would have known that their data was being exploited and manipulated in this way. I would suggest to folks out there, first of all, every one of us that have children in the Missouri school districts, as has been noted in the Willard School District, in this case in Lebanon, they're already collecting this data on our kids. My suggestion would be the suggestion of Sherry Lagaris, who would say to schedule a record review and bring your own copying machine and sit down and copy everything that your school is keeping track of in relationship right. to your child, because you don't know who has access to it at this point and how they may potentially be considering using it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Paul Ellison, American Spring 2011, and Guerrilla Radio, American Spring. This case just keeps unfolding and keeps unfolding, and we'll keep an eye on it. But just amazing. I mean, and people need to watch this, because it is really, you know, this is not just happening in Lebanon, Missouri. This is happening all over the country, folks. Your kids' data is up for grabs, and, you know, courts and DFS systems and, I mean, you know, depending on how your nice, cozy little network works in your county, you know, they are using this under the cover of darkness to manipulate you the way they want to manipulate you. It's just, it's not a good thing, folks. You need to really get involved and engaged. I mean, I've always said this, and I'll say it again. Every time you're on, Paul, you know, it's the judicial system that is undermining the culture in this country, and nobody's watching it. We're so busy. We're focused on the legislative and Cindy, help me. On the legislative and executive branch, that we
right.
can't.
Mm-hmm.
My mind is a mush. That we are not watching what the judicial system is doing to this country, and it's happening on every level of government, on the very most basic level of your county government, all the way up to the Supreme Court. It's a mess. Paul Ellison, American Spring 2011. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again and keep us updated. Keep posting those updates on my Facebook wall.
Will do. Thanks, Lisa. It's always a pleasure to join you, ladies. Have a good evening.
Thanks. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Chris Agee from the Western Center for Journalism.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and I'm with Cindy McGee, and this is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. If you had the opportunity last week to hear our great interview with Ryan and Cliven Bundy, you were really treated to a great interview, because with all of the controversy that's been going on about this case and all of the ridiculous reporting, even in the conservative media, I'm still mad at Glenn Beck. I may cancel my subscription to The Blaze. I'm so furious. And Fox News, I've been watching clips on Fox News all week as well. You know, you are not getting the whole story on this deal. I mean, this is a modern-day Boston Tea Party situation. You know, this is not just a case where a man is going revolutionary and not paying his fees, not paying his taxes. I mean, there are legitimate reasons for what's going on out there. The Bundys, you know, are pushing back against the federal government, which have ramifications for us all across the country. And I've been following the reporting of Christopher Agee of the Western Center for Journalism. Great stuff. I mean, just great stuff there, details and aspects of what's been going on the Bundy Ranch, and also some Justina Pelletier issues, too. You guys have been on top of that as well. Thanks for being with me again, Chris. We haven't talked in quite a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's always a pleasure to join you, though. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I really appreciate you being on. So, first of all, how do you like it out there in Arizona?
You know, we had our first 100-degree day yesterday, and it's not even May yet. So ask me again summer. But so far, it's great.
Wow. Okay. Well, you guys are on top of the stuff out there, regardless of the heat issues. Let's talk about the Bundys. You guys, I mean, you've been on top of this Bundy issue from the get go, and you've got all the great details about what's going on out there. What's the word on the street as far as, you know, that area out there, cattle country, you know, in the western states where you are now, huge land grab situation. They control most of the land out there. The federal government has controlled most of the land out in that area anyway for a very long time. What are people thinking about that?
Well, it's, you know, and this whole situation has brought that into the spotlight where a lot of people may not have known. I mean, the federal government owns 85% of Nevada. And, you know, that's an extreme example, but it's that way across a lot of these western states. And, you know, it's just, it's an unbelievable affront to states' rights and individual property rights and everything that this country was based on, for the federal government to come in and now the BLM's looking at Texas, 90,000 acres in Texas that they want to take. And, you know, the federal government, and like you said, some of the conservative pundits are going along with it. And, you know, it's just really frustrating for a lot of people, especially ranchers who are most affected by all this.
Yeah, you wrote a piece today about the Texas issue. We had a situation here in Missouri last year that crept up and was successfully thwarted because there were some very astute grassroots folks who were on top of it, but huge amounts of land. Cindy, do you remember how many acres the watershed was trying to encompass here in Missouri when they were trying to take that over? It was most of the southern part of Missouri.
Yeah. It was up almost to Lake of the Ozarks. It was touching, I think, some of the counties in Lake of the Ozarks too.
Yeah, one third of Missouri and a huge chunk of Arkansas trying to take all the watershed land. Yeah, I mean, just so, Chris, what gives with the federal government all of a sudden with, you know, the huge land grab, and they were quietly trying to do it here in Missouri, but they're not trying to be quiet about it anymore.
No, when you show up guns blazing, aiming at elderly family members and peaceful protesters, you know, they're not trying to hide anything anymore. And I think it goes hand in hand with this whole, I mean, the Obama administration has just let the federal government run amok, and, you know, this is just one aspect of that, and they're taking things that they have no right to, and they're changing the rules as they go, and, you know, who's going to stop the federal government? You know, I wrote also about how the Department of Homeland Security is stockpiling ammunition at just a breathtaking rate. You know, what are they going to do with this? We already see that the BLM is capable of showing up with armed agents, and, you know, luckily hundreds of patriots came out to stand against them. But what's going to happen when they're just hopelessly outarmed? You know, it's really frightening.
we've known for quite some time that they've been stockpiling ammunition for, you know, non-military ammunition. So, and it was pretty amazing with the firepower and, it was a paramilitary operation that they came after the Bundys with, you know, with the snipers and the helicopters. I mean, they were using big equipment to come after these folks. You know, and for any of us who've, you know, I've personally attended Tea Party rallies and Tea Party demonstrations where you see the Homeland Security SUVs lined up and the armed guards getting out of them to, you know, monitor the situation. It's amazing, you know, and where you can't go to the store to buy ammunition anymore because of the government's buying it all up. I don't actually know how to address that.
You and me both. I mean, they're adding 25 million shotgun rounds to what they already have amassed, and like you said, it's, yeah, exactly. Over the next 5 years, they're adding 5 million rounds per year. They're looking for somebody to supply that, and you know, it's I don't know. I mean, the right of individuals to be armed is being taken away, like you said, because the government is taking all the ammunition. What good is a gun if you have nothing to load it with?
So have you found in any of your research to suggest that some of these ammunition plants are refusing to sell to the government? Because I have heard that in the past.
I've heard that, you know, and obviously I'm sure some of them are, but I don't think that they're going to tell the government that that's the reason. I think they'll probably shield it under we're not able to fill your needs. But they're putting these feelers out on federal websites left and right, and just looking for a manufacturer who's able to keep up with their skyrocketing demand.
That's just, I'm just speechless. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. That's just ridiculous.
This is Cindy. Christopher, is anyone in the media even asking the question under what authority do some of these agencies like the BLM, why are they armed with military capacity or armed at all to be able to take police or military-style action against citizens of this country? How is that even possible? Is anybody that question?
I've asked it numerous times throughout this whole thing, and some people are, but the mainstream media is by and large ignoring the whole story. I mean, you have Assemblywoman Michelle Fiore out in Nevada who is asking the tough questions. She's not getting any answers, though. And, I mean, they have the right because they say they have the right, and who's going to stop them? That's the best that I've come up with so far.
Stunning. Stunning.
Well, they have the guns, and they usually outnumber everybody. So I guess
that's
how they get the
right. Exactly right.
Well, I'm just waiting for the drones to start dropping bombs on the folks. I mean, really, I mean, at any point in time, and while we were watching the Bundy situation unfold, you know, at any point in time, you know, of course the helicopters were there, but you know they have the drones, and you know that they've got absolute intelligence on where everybody is at every particular moment and what's going on behind the scenes. I mean, they can definitely out-military you at any particular time. And this isn't even, you know, this isn't even the official military. Another thing, another question that crossed my mind is the military, you've always got a question. I mean, they take an oath to defend, you know, American citizenry here on our soil. These folks that are in these paramilitary positions, you know, like the Department of Land Management or Homeland Security, they're not military folks. Has anybody ever asked them how they feel about actually going after American citizens? I always wondered what's inside their head. Is anybody thinking about that?
You're referring to members of the armed services.
Well, the people in the Homeland Security folks and the Department of Land Management folks, the ones with the sniper rifles, you know, go after American citizens, you know, no conscience whatsoever about this kind of thing. You know, they have no problem firing on Americans.
Yeah, I don't know. I know plenty of people in active military service are outraged by everything that's going on, you know, but people who take a role in the Department of Homeland Security are probably more apt to believe that the federal government has a lot of these rights that they are now proclaiming they do. So, I mean, I think it's just a completely different way of thinking that a lot of these people have, that they are the end-all and be-all authority in America today. And I'm sure there are plenty who think this is just excessive force and not constitutional whatsoever, but I tend to think that they're probably outnumbered within these federal agencies.
This is frightening. What do you find in our military?
Sorry.
Go ahead, Cindy.
The military is not allowed to do this at all under the Posse Comitatus Act. The military is not allowed to use weapons, to use force, and to be engaged against the American people. And yet we've got federal agencies also run by the federal government, just as our military is, that are walking around obviously well-trained with military-style weapons, and they're being used against the American citizens in a military fashion. It's an outrage.
Exactly. Yeah, we've given a forum to numerous soldiers who have said exactly that. You know, they're supposed to be the ones who are trained to protect American interests abroad and at home, and you know they're not allowed to do these things. But federal agencies are taking that on themselves and taking that role from them, and you know they're outraged by it, just like patriots all across America are.
Chris, what do you know about the latest on the Justina Pelletier case with the habeas corpus that was written last week?
They are taking it to the state Supreme Court. It's an emergency action, and I just, you know, who's to say where this is going? But I mean, the fact is, it's more than a year later, and she's suffering immensely under this situation. If ever there was a need for an emergency action at the high court level, I think this is it. But who knows how this thing is going to go?
Yeah, I mean, and as far as you know, there's been no action taken. Cindy, do you know, or Chris, do you know how? I mean, when a habeas corpus is written, how soon do they have to act?
I don't know.
I don't know right offhand. It should be very soon. I mean, I'm expecting something any day. I check it every, I have a Google alert for it, and I'm checking it every day, and I haven't seen anything since that was filed.
Did you guys see what Governor Duvall did this week, came out and said this week? He came out and finally weighed in on the case, and he said that he wouldn't intervene, that there was a long history of medical neglect on the part of the Pelletiers where Justina is concerned. But the first question that popped into my mind, and someone asked
really?
The question, was why, how, where's the evidence of that? The family is not even a resident of your state, and you're making allegations that there's a long history of medical neglect. How can you even say that? That is where he weighed in this week. And
somebody needs to dive into that man's campaign contributions for his last election and find out where he got his money. That's exactly what somebody needs to do.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. It is ridiculous. But then we have to remember that Massachusetts, and I'm going to say this, but this is a problem all across the country. But Massachusetts is a very liberal state. Patrick Duvall is a very loyal Democrat, Obama buddy. And when it comes to government agencies like DFS, I really didn't expect him to do the right thing, unfortunately. And expected him to drink the Kool-Aid. And that's exactly what he's done, and that's what he's come out, and that's what he's said. How does he justify, as governor of Massachusetts, taking a child away from a family that lives in Connecticut?
Amazing, amazing. Yeah, I follow the money. Somebody needs to go through his campaign contributions for his last election. I bet that's where the answer is. Okay, Chris, today you filed a story today that a lot of us are watching out of the corner of our eye. Do you think Jeb Bush is going to run for president? Do you think it'll fly if he does?
It's beginning to look more like a probability, but you know, like I wrote today, the vast majority of Republicans, especially the conservative base of the party, are just dead set against knocking that down before it even gets started. I mean, and it's not just because he's another Bush. I mean, I think that has something to do with it, but he is wrong on a lot of issues as far as conservatives feel, and I think we're just tired of having these mushy moderate candidates who have no chance of standing up against the Democrat machine. You need somebody who can describe what needs to happen in America in a way that people from all walks of life will relate to, and Jeb Bush is not that guy.
Absolutely. But, you know, the Republicans, they're the party of it's your turn is next kind of thing. And
exactly,
you know,
right.
Well, I'm a little worried that we got that with Mitt Romney, you know, there was, you know, and we all kind of went along with it. I just wonder if they continue down this road, we're going to have Hillary, obviously, and the Republican Party is going to go up in flames.
You're right. That's exactly what's going to happen if he gets the nomination.
Absolutely. All right, well, Chris Agee, you've been doing some great stuff at the Center for Western Journalism there. What's up next for you? What have you got your eye on?
Well, it's whatever happens. I mean, it's hard to plan your weeks out considering how much is going on in America these days. We're just trying to get on top of what's happening next and letting people know what the mainstream media is pretending is not happening.
And the Center for Western Journalism is a place to go, folks. If you are, I have been very disappointed. I am probably going to cancel my Blaze subscription. But Fox News, just sad. I mean, we've got, you know, you've got to start going to some of these alternative sites, folks, if you want to get the real scoop on what's really going on, the other details that the other so-called conservative media are not going to print or to publish. Because, you know, if you've got to do your due diligence and look to these true journalistic sites that are going on both sides of the story. Chris, you've been doing a great job there. I hope you'll come on again with us real soon and keep us updated on the latest events.
Thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. And how can we find you on Twitter and Facebook, Chris?
Twitter, my handle is at BCAG, it's BCAGEE. And you can look me up at the Informed Conservative with B. Christopher Agee on Facebook.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you, Chris. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right.
Okay, and we'll take one more real quick break, and we will be right back to wrap things up.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Our well-being at home and our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our us wives and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes, can have no reason to doubt our resolve because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
We are back. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and I am with Cindy McGee, and this is Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And I'm so glad I didn't tear myself apart today trying to find things to fill time with because, you know, all of the stories that we try to fill the time with, we never seem to get to. Cindy and I talk about this every week. There is something that I kind of wanted to put out there, though. There is some hope, folks. in this big Agenda 21 land grab that you're seeing with the Bundy Ranch and here in Missouri with the White River Watershed Blue Way thing and the thing down in Texas that we just talked about with Chris Agee a minute ago. The New American reported today, lawmakers unveil plan to liberate Western lands and evict the feds. Real briefly, you can go to the New American and see this. It's on their homepage. With the now infamous federal abuses against the Bundy ranching family and its supporters in Nevada helping to awaken a sleeping giant, liberty-minded elected officials from Western states are coming together with citizens to take action in defense of the Constitution and the West. Their mission? To wrest control over the vast expanses of the land and wealth in the region that are unconstitutionally claimed by Washington, D.C.-based politically bureaucratic classes. Now a new alliance of lawmakers and citizens has a concrete plan to make those goals in reality. This is great. You got to listen to this. As the New American reported this week, more than 50 elected officials from 9 Western states met on April 18th at the Utah Capitol for the legislative summit on the transfer for public lands. Among them were state house speakers, state senators, a U.S. senator, county commissioners, and more. The goal, multiple organizers and attendees explained, is to strip the federal government of almost 50% of the land in Western states that is claimed to own, that it claims to own in defiance of the U.S. Constitution and various agreements. And if you listen to our interview with Clive and Bundy and Ryan Bundy last week, you'll understand why that is very true and why the states still own the land in absence of anything the federal government has done. They have claimed that land illegally. When those states became states, they totally gave up the federal government gave up any right to that land, and it's clearly outlined in last week's interview. Let's see. And I skipped down. Okay, so that last week, another alliance of lawmakers, citizens, businessmen, ranchers, sheriffs, officials, and more came together and created the Coalition of Western States United Against Tyranny, or, wait for it, COWS, for short. I love that. Already, the network is seeing a phenomenal growth, with more than 25 lawmakers joining up. By April 22nd, Representative Shea explained, COWS has grown massively in just 1 week, and legislators from all over the West are jumping on board. Okay, so Missouri legislators, are you listening to this? We've got some representation in the Western states with some backbone who are absolutely willing to do something. So when the Agenda 21 folks come back to Missouri to get the White River Watershed Blue Way thing rolling again, and you know they will, we want to see something like COWS in Missouri. Just saying. That kind of thing needs to happen here in the Midwest and in the East so that this whole land grab thing can go away. I don't know, Cindy. I'm so tired of this.
No, I totally agree. And it's time for our lawmakers to stand up and do what's right. And if they had stood up and done what was right a long time ago, it wouldn't be left up to an individual citizen like Clive and Bundy to take a stand and to risk his life, his family's life, to stand up for what's right and to stand up for his constitutional rights.
Absolutely.
And shame on the lawmakers. And that goes from city to federal lawmakers. The whole gamut is involved here of people who have been elected to represent the people, and you're failing to do your job big time. And it's time for you to put your big boy pants on and get the job done.
You know, and another thing that kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier with the judicial thing and the parental rights issues in Missouri and stuff, this is another example of why the judiciary needs to be dismantled and rebuilt, because the judiciary, I mean, the courts have been ignoring the fact that these Western states that, you know, still, and all of this federal land is not federal land. You know, they relinquished their rights to it when these states became states, that all of this land should have returned back to state control. And the courts have been ignoring that for over a century.
Absolutely.
And nobody's calling them on it. And that's a huge, 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 huge point that the mainstream media is not reporting. The so-called conservative media is not reporting on that. And that's the biggest point that the Bundys are trying to make with this entire land grab situation is that, you know, and Clive and Bundy has always said, you know, I will pay my fees to the state. I will not pay my fees to the federal government. And that's it, you know, and you're not hearing that on Fox. You're not hearing it on Glenn Beck.
Right. And you hear so many people across the nation, conservatives included, who are saying, well, but the federal government does own that land. They owned it before they were given that land after the Mexican-American War, before Nevada even became a state. Well, therein lies the real point. Once Nevada became a state, they then, all of that was forgiven, and they got their land back.
Right.
According to the way statehood is done, and the federal government no longer owned that land. It became, when the boundaries of Nevada were set, those were the state boundaries. That was then state land, state-owned land.
Yeah. I don't know why that's so hard.
Control of that land. So why is that so hard for people to get their heads around? And it's important to get your head around it because the federal government doesn't have any right marching in and taking all of this land from states and controlling what's being done with that land. And controlling, it doesn't have any right to control the resources on that land either.
Nope. That's
it's up to the
states
to regulate
sovereign.
That.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
In conjunction with the local governments and the citizens of the state and their elected officials. That's who should be deciding what's going to happen with the land and what fees are going to be charged for what is public land and who's going to be using it and how they're using it. It's up to the states to do that. And we, the taxpayers, shouldn't be having to foot the bill for what the BLM is doing and the federal government is doing in taking out
the multi-million dollar, for the multi-million dollar paramilitary operations. And, you know, I don't know if you've been watching. I mean, I'm sure I saw a video today. And I think it was on the Bundy webpage, Bundy Ranch, where what they've been doing to their cows and the traps that they've been setting for wild animals and cows there that are still there.
Right.
They, shooting, what they call euthanizing, but shooting prize bulls, dragging them for a mile across the the plain there and leaving them out there. I mean, just, I don't know. It just goes on and on.
It's outrageous.
It's outrageous.
It's really outrageous.
And you don't hear a damn thing about it. You don't hear a damn thing about it.
Nope. And, when you look at the Justina Pelletier case, when you look at what's going on with Common, come on, legislators. You can't even get your act together and get something substantive passed in Missouri to push back on Common Core and the data system. Are we even going to see that happen this year, Lisa?
Yeah, and how hard is that? Okay, so here's my premonition.
When we have a Clive and Bundy situation at the public schools when the parents wake up and find out what's happened, what's being done to their children, and the rights that they've lost, it's going to make Clive and Bundy look like a walk in the park.
Yeah, and wait till people start homeschooling their kids, in mass. You know, what are they going to do? They're going to start, DFS is going to be knocking on people's doors, yanking people's kids out of their homes for educational neglect, or they're going to make something up, and it's going to be a big disaster. And so here's my premonition for what's going to happen in the Missouri legislature, okay? We've got a number of very good bills that have been either recycled from the previous year or just brought up this year on Common Core. We've got a Second Amendment bill. We've got a couple of other things floating through the legislature that should be no-brainers. Okay, we've got a couple of really good bills right now about the data collection. And, you and I both know the players that have been going through and trying to work these bills, working really, these are average citizens working really hard on their own free time. They're not lobbyists. They're not professional lobbyists. I mean, they are average concerned citizens who have taken a stand on these issues and have taken just countless hours, weeks, months
to get these things. Lobbyists are paid to do Yeah, lobbyists are paid to do what they do. What these people are doing is they're spending their own money to go to Jefferson
and
City to look out after your interests and your children's interests and to stand up for families in Missouri against the educational abuse that's coming at us.
Yeah, and like the Second Amendment and all of these, and the paper ballots issue. Oh, we're going to have Frieda on soon, too, to talk about the paper ballots issue that isn't even going to see the light of day because you know, it doesn't line up with the special interest groups padding the pockets of the Republicans down in Jefferson City. So I predict, my prediction is that we may get one or two kind of measly little watered down versions of something as them throwing us a bone, but 90% of what's really good that should be a no-brainer that should pass through with flying colors is not going to happen in our Republican-dominated, veto-proof majority legislature. We're not going to get diddly squat. I think they're going to run the clock out again like they did last year at the very last minute, and things will just kind of disappear poof. And we will have spent yet hundreds of thousands of dollars in a legislative session to have accomplished nothing of good for the citizenry.
No, they might as well just stay home, and we might as well stop paying their salaries because they're sure as heck not representing the people of Missouri or taking care of our state's business.
Well, what we really need is we need to convert to a situation that, like they have in Texas, where the legislature only meets every other year, and we also need to pass some very good recall legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
we
can recall legislation.
We need to get citizens involved in being informed voters.
Yeah, you may see a little bit better dancing in the halls of the legislature if we had some good recall legislation, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay, folks. Well, we've probably just about run out the clock, so we need to thank a few people. I want to thank Robin Eubanks. Looking forward to seeing her on Friday here in St. Charles County and tomorrow, Thursday, in Springfield, Illinois. Thanks to Paul Ellison for his updates on the Ligaris family situation and all of the craziness that's going on down there. And just, again, want to reiterate, folks, it's not just happening in middle Missouri. It's happening all over the United States. As you can see from the if you connect the dots to the Pelletiers, to the Ligaris here in Missouri, you know, the things that are going on in the judiciary, in the West with the Bundys. I mean, it's just, things are just happening all over the place. Want to thank Chris Agee. Go to Center for Western Journalism and the Informed Conservative and read his great writing there, folks. It's very important that you, you know, you do your own due diligence. Don't just rely on Fox News and obviously Glenn Beck is so disappointing. I am going to have to cancel my subscription. It just drives me crazy. You can't rely on these bigger entities. Once they get big, they stop reporting the real stuff. They have other agendas. You got to, you know, if you want the real news, you got to go out and look for these other entities. Western Center for Journalism, New American are a couple of really good places to go. Hit the Patriot Nation Facebook page, and thepatriotnation.net. It's got some great information there. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and we can hit us on Facebook and Twitter. Culture Vigilante, Facebook and Twitter. And until next week, folks, we'll be here Wednesday night, 7 p.m., check in with Dave Court Fridays and Saturday nights here on Missouri Grassroots Radio and Cynthia Davis on Tuesday evenings, 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. We look forward to seeing you again next week, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here, Missouri Grassroots Radio, Culture Vigilante. Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Mom!